the right of my employees in a different way. This is an informational event. This is about learning. This is also about freedom of speech. And what I saw, what I experienced, was a gargantuan effort that prevented, from what I saw, any smoking or drug use. I did not see any. What I was a party to was, I don't know, hundreds of people turning away from the event. Number one, because they got held up so long at security trying to get into it. And number two, being so offended, and in some cases having medical patients having their prescription drugs taken away from them.
Thank you for your testimony.
Good afternoon, honorable commissioners. My name is John William Cornett, and I am a street-level activist and advocate. Did you guys know that cannabis heals cancer?
He's just cutting into his time.
I'm sorry. I just think it's important for people to know. Reason I'm an activist, I'm a USAF veteran, Vietnam-era veteran. I spent 8 years in the United States Air Force honorably. And I know how to obey rules. I know how to follow policies and procedures. I know how to be a good citizen. And I know how to be an advocate to help people. I care about people. Every person in here is a real human being. We care about people. That's why we're putting so much of ourselves into this, to let people know that there's healing here. This is not about getting high. Some people are stuck on stupid, and they think it's about getting high. It's not about getting high. It's about getting well. And we're just trying to share that information with people so that they know they don't have to go kill themselves with chemo and radiation. They can use cannabis. 60 grams in 90 days heals most serious cancers. Okay? That's my message. I'm a musician, too. I like to tell people that. And if you're going to take that opportunity away from me, that's going to hurt. And I think there's somebody up above here that's going to think about that, too. And he might want to ask you a question about what kind of heart you have that you would say that people who are real human beings can't carry a message of healing to our fellow humans, please. Just because some idiot down the road or Hawthorne Bridge? Really? Come on now. Why did they even say that, waste my time in this important meeting? This is a beautiful place with people thinking and speaking positive and real things about what we need to survive and coexist. This is not right. It's not fair. I beg you, please, to consider approving this for us. We need it, please. Thank you very much. Humanity needs it. Thank you very much. Oregon needs it.
Thank you.
Next are Justin Bridges, Scott Gordon, Nikki Gates, followed by Eric Llewellyn, Don Skakey, and Jesse Sponberg.
My name is Justin James Bridges. I'm a professional musician and performer at Hempstock, also an activist. I've also been involved in the organizing and planning of the event. I was one of the personal musicians that was on stage telling people they weren't allowed to smoke at the event. I've walked around in this town and seen, on other days, and seen that park full of people smoking. Seen police in that park with people smoking, and they do nothing. If it's really a public safety issue, they would be doing things. When you have Brewfest, you have fights that break out, there's been muggings, people, it's a violent... Violence comes from that event. Violence comes from the alcohol events. Y'all do nothing to stop that. Y'all have no problems allowing those events to go on. It's really disgusting to sit here and hear some of the things that they're saying. So you're saying that we have a permitted area, and now we're in charge of securing outside of that area as well? Whereas no other event has to do that. You're not going to shut down Blues Fest or Brew Fest for people smoking outside of their event. There was nobody smoking in our event. And you want to talk about failures? Look about the failure of this police department. Y'all were supposed to be securing the property. We were paying to have y'all help secure the property and watch the property overnight. And yet, they left their post, and what happened? A bunch of our vendors got robbed. It's absolutely disgusting to hear y'all talk about public safety issues when your police force is so laughable. Honestly, you have someone trying to put Nazi memorabilia as a police force. I'm sorry.
Thank you for your testimony. You need to stick to the topic. And we
That's fine.
The clock's going, but I think your time is up. Thank you very much.
It's absolutely laughable.
Hello. Mayor Hales and the council. This is my second year doing this with you folks. I'm Nikki, and I'm the hospitality manager for Hemstock. I have been since 2009. They created the position for me. They couldn't figure out what I was, so I guess that's what I was, so that's what they named me. I am also a patient here in the state for numerous reasons, and I'll keep those private to myself, thank you. But I was born and raised here in Oregon by a golf pro mother and a stepfather that was a judge, the Honorable Jerry K. McAllister, that is deceased now. They raised me to be very respectful, to mean what I say what I mean, and do what I mean, and do what I say. So as those things growing up here in Portland, I was very disheartened by showing up there after 27 days in the hospital because of diverticulitis and major surgeries to get me out for the last day of Hemstock so I could speak and at least be part of it. When I got there, I had to release my Gatorade 6 different times and get new ones. And for a person that just comes out of the hospital, that can be detrimental to you when you're being pushed around in a wheelchair all day long. You can't have dehydration. And so taking those from me with my badges that I've worn since 2009, it's not a very respectful thing to do to somebody in my state on that day. And I thought that that was very inappropriate, and I talked about it on stage. I'm a mother and a grandmother, like I said last year. I take my children with me. I take my grandchildren with me. I do not take them to this event to smoke. I take them to this event so they can be educated by freedom of speech. It's their right as humans in this world to be educated by other things and a wide array of things. We give our children goals and standards. I give my children high goals. They try to meet them the best they can, but I never give them standards like the ones that this city has given Mr. Stanford and all of us to meet. There's no possible way we can do that. And I thank you also very, very much for your time.
Thank you.
Next, please come up, Eric Llewellyn, Don Skakey, Jesse Spomberg. Is Courtney Marar? Oh, Jesse's good.
How y'all doing today? My name is Eric Llewellyn. I was a Hempstock patron for 4 or 5 years, and then within the past 2 years, I started volunteering my services and helping out, and I am the volunteer coordinator for Hempstock. We coordinate about 200 staffing members to run gates, water distribution, and everything for all of our staffing members that we have. There were no complications with any smoking on the facility grounds. We had everybody looking out with radios, for if there were anybody caught, we would all be there to remove them from the grounds without any complications. Now, to say that we are reliable and to take on the grounds around what we took on, that's like saying if somebody got drunk at Brewfest and they go to another town and they do something stupid, Brewfest is responsible for that. We handled our rights inside the grounds where we were at. No complications. Any smoking, even cigarettes were lit, and we would see that smoke, and we would, not necessarily a pack of wolves, but all of our crew would go to those cigarette smokers and say, this can't be happening either. Because of the thought of what if it was marijuana? Well, there's no smoking period, so that came up many of times. I'd just like to say that I hope you guys change your appeal process and allow us to do Hempstock this year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Don Skakey. I'm a cannabis reform activist. I'd like you to think about freedom, free speech, personal responsibility, and the ability of any individual to control the actions of another, and how far that responsibility goes. In fact, that is why we have law enforcement and police department, is to enforce the laws that we all pass as society to live under. At this event, I had a signature gathering for a petition in Washington State. We got quite a few people from Vancouver area, southwestern Washington, come down to this event. In previous years, we've done substantially higher numbers of signatures than we did at this event last year. The booth space was at the north end by the gate, right literally adjacent to the gate. And I could not believe what I was seeing. It was they were taking people's lighters away, sealed bottles of water. Just you couldn't bring anything into the park. And as has been previously said, this intense focus on each person and what they were possessing caused quite a backup and was quite discouraging to other people. I'm disappointed to hear that the law enforcement that was in place that day seemed to relegate their responsibilities to either the event staff. You know, we've heard about, well, we saw this go on. Was any warning given? I mean, did they go? The Parks Department, I believe, said they were there for positive presence. Did they go engage these people and say, hey, I'm glad you're having a good time at the event, but this isn't allowed. Would you please not do that? Did they have serious offenses there? And as you said, Mayor, did they have complaints from the citizenry, the neighboring businesses, passersby? What were the complaints specifically? So I would ask that you do give yourself the opportunity to attend HenFest this year, Mayor, and see for yourself. I would ask that whatever rules are put in place for this event, it should be a blanket policy for every event, whether it's a veg fest or a beer fest or
Thank
a
you very
fest.
Much. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Hey, guys. My name is Jesse Spomberg, and this feels kind of weird today because usually I show up mad at you guys. But today I show up full of hope. Like, we're in a brave new world right now where we are setting the groundwork for legislation and policy that will affect people for years after you guys are gone. This is an opportunity to really craft sensible legislation that other municipalities can adopt, right? You guys, not you guys particularly, but the Parks Department, you guys are smart enough to see when somebody's testimony is as sincere and polite as these people's here. And you can see when some testimony is really flimsy and transparent and when people are shaking when they're talking about the evil weed, right? You guys know these people are so sincere. I love you guys so much. And I'm sorry that you are all patients and that you rely on this medicine that needs to be advertised. You know, you're a nurse. You know that cancer is horrible. What I want from you guys is not to make it hard, not to make it so that the smallest offenses, like sneaking candy into a theater, will get something shut down. I want you guys to take ownership with us. Don't work against us. You should be running this, Mayor. You should be running this, Commissioner Fish. Why are we working, like, against the Parks Department? We have wonderful, wonderful park rangers. Those guys do such a great job. And our only offense is smoking some pot? That's like shutting down a theater because somebody snuck in their own soda pop. Please, I ask you guys, take a leadership role. It's an election year. You know, the marijuana community is a big constituency. We see in other cities or in other states like Washington and Colorado how much money is made. You guys don't want to turn away from that money. That's just simply bad business. Thank you guys so much for your time.
Thank you.
We are reasonable, rational, and mainstream.
Next, I have Courtney Marar, Sean Vassar, Paul Lani is on the list. I believe you've already spoken.
Yes, you did.
And then it would be Mary Haddock.
Hi, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. I'm Courtney Moran, and I am a cannabis attorney. I have a Master of Laws in Environmental and Natural Resources Law with an emphasis in industrial hemp law from Lewis and Clark, and I speak at cannabis conferences throughout the country. And Hempstock is truly a unique community event. Not only does this event bring people from all over Oregon together and from the Pacific Northwest together, but it is not an event that focuses only on marijuana, but it focuses on the cannabis genus and industrial hemp as well. I was one of the first speakers at the event last year, and I spoke about industrial hemp history and the current status of the laws and how the laws are changing throughout the country and on the federal level. And I think it's very important for all of us to have a safe place and for the public to have a safe place to come to learn about cannabis. I can honestly tell you that I did not see anyone smoking cannabis at the event last year. There was very strict security, as has already been mentioned. I got my bag checked twice when I went through each level of the gates when I was there. And I saw everyone that actually did come into the festival being very cooperative with security, and it was a peaceful event. You know, one booth even had a scavenger hunt encouraging the community to come together and to meet one another. This event is an excellent union between marijuana and industrial hemp. There were booths that had industrial hemp products for sale, including clothing and shoes and different bags, you know, like purses, that kind of stuff. So I urge you to please approve the permit for this year's hemp stock. This is a very important, peaceful, educational family event that we need to continue to have here in Portland. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sean. I run a nonprofit called Pangea. I'm a member of EPAP, which I believe some of the commissioners are also involved in. I have a real simple message. It's about community, and I believe this brings many different communities together and gives them an opportunity to cross-pollinate. And also the economy. I believe that it's a strong move for the Portland economy, and our summers benefit largely from big events, and this event is growing and will only add to it.
Hi, commissioners. My name is Mary Haddock. I am a cannabis business owner. I am also the coordinator for the State of Oregon Parents for Pot chapter. I, as a mother, I was also part of the core staff of Hempstock last year. As someone who ran from one gate to the other gate, from one end of the park to the other end of the park, I would say possibly 1,000 times over the event period last year. I was checked numerous times without even having a bag. It was the very first time that I had ever been to Hempstock, so I couldn't compare it to anything else except for the stories that I've heard. It was confusing for the staff. It was extreme. We weren't treated at all with any kind of care of our feelings of anything. We were talked down to. We were talked at instead of with. It wasn't. Nobody was working with us. As part of the medical team, it was extremely confusing for me. I'd get called from one end of the park to the other end of the park, and there would be nothing there. Then I would be told by security that that it was a mistake, that there was an error, that they didn't mean to call me. I can tell you that it was extremely, extremely hard for anybody who was core staff last year, anybody who was trying to make that and comply with everything that was put in front of us. It was extremely hard for us to even appear to do our jobs and appear to work with the security that was there. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thanks, Mary.
And next we have Clay Pierce, Aaron Purchase, Astarte Rainbow, followed by Bruce Knight and Danelle Malloy.
Good afternoon. I can only echo the sentiments of all the other people here have come up and said.
Just give us your name first.
My name is Clay Pierce. I'm an activist for cannabis and hemp regulation and reintroduction into the society of ours so that we can all profit from this. I have been at every hemp stock event since the first one we had in 2005, and this last year was absolutely the most trying and difficult one I've ever been to. I was only there for about 20 minutes. I was checked twice. On the way in, I was checked twice, and I was checked at the halfway point between the two, and I felt like I was in Germany at Checkpoint Charlie. It was insane. We were already inside the event, and we're still being checked for contraband or just whatever. Like Paul said, for cigarette lighters and pipes that we had bought at the other part of the venue. It was ludicrous. It made no sense at all for the people to even go there because they were having their items taken from them as they bought them. So why would they go there? It was completely prejudicial on the securities of person to treat us that way. It was crazy. I could not stand it. I had to leave. I appreciate the time to talk. I'm too upset to even form my words properly. It was a very trying event to try to enjoy it.
Thank you for your testimony.
Hi, my name is Erin Purchase. Thank you for having me here today. I am an internationally known cannabis activist. I have spoken at several cannabis festivals throughout the United States and also Canada. I have visited Toronto last year and was invited to speak there. I love the hemp stock because it's in my home state. I do a lot of work outside of even our country. But this is cool because this is where I'm from. I'm speaking on behalf of myself and my 10-year-old daughter, Brave Michaela Comstock. This will be her third year speaking at Hempstock. When she was 7 years old, she was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia here in Portland. Cannabis oil was able to allow her to go through 2.5 years of chemo without a single Tylenol and minimal extra treatments from the doctors. Her oncologist at Legacy Emmanuel refer to her as the star patient, and they send kids to Paul Stanford's clinic to get their cards, okay? Michaela loves speaking at Hempstock. When I told her I was here this morning here this afternoon to speak on behalf of begging the city to allow it to come, she was confused on why. Why again is she being discriminated against based on the medicine she uses? She's a child. She's who you're worried about it being out of the hands of. I educate parents on cannabis oil, taking medicine in capsules. I help them get their children on the legal Oregon medical marijuana program. This is what I talk about at this festival. I got my lighter taken right out of my purse from security. That's the only festival I've ever had that happen to. I didn't see many people smoking. I didn't even see many people there last year compared to every other year. And that's detrimental to the city of Portland because I used to travel here from eastern Oregon to visit this festival in full and spend my money here in your city. And I want other people to spend their money here too. Thank you for having me here today.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Astarte Rainbow, and I'm here to speak on two things. Number one, next year I'm hoping to bring my great-granddaughter to the festival, so you know I'm no spring chicken. But I came off of opioids with Paul's help to get me through the loops to do it legally. I don't have to use them anymore. My health is improving dramatically. And also, I'm a big hemp fan. I don't know if any of you have gotten any, but those hemp clothes last forever. I would like to see this continue because people need to understand marijuana, cannabis, whatever you want to call it, is not an evil. It's going to be legal in another month and a half. Hemp is such an important industry. Oregon has always been green. We can use hemp to replace so many wood products and things like that and to save lives. Hemp is, of course, a high-protein seed. It's wonderful. I don't understand why you're doing this. I went to Waterfront Blues Festival. There were people right outside the fence shooting up drugs. Yeah. There were people outside the fence getting drunk. You never talked about shutting them down. Why? This is prejudicial. And I've never been to Hemp Fest. I'm going to go this year. I'm taking my great-grandkid. God is willing and you let us have it. It just seems that you're picking on him, and he has done more good for medical patients in this state than any other individual human being. You guys need to be real. It's going to be illegal. What are you going to do?
Thank you. Thanks very much.
And the last two are Bruce Knight and Danelle Malloy.
And if there's anybody else wanting to testify who didn't sign up, you're welcome to come and join.
Yeah, I am Bruce Alexander Knight. I live in Southeast Portland. Mr. Mayor, commissioners, there is a reason why so many people call our city Potland, Oregon, along with, I'm sure quite a few other people. I moved here in part because of Oregon's more liberal marijuana laws. This was in the 1970s after 6 years in the U.S. Army. I've been here pretty much ever since and intend to stay here the rest of my life. As I understand what this hearing about is, the Park Department has denied a permit for the next hemp stock because they say that Mr. Stanford and his staff did not comply with their conditions, and that would include rampant use of marijuana, in quotes, and, quote, failure to prevent illegal drug use. Well, I'll tell you something. The Pope could talk in Waterfront Park, and there'd be people in the crowd smoking reefers. You are never going to prevent all of it. I went to Hempstock this year for the first time, and I was frankly surprised. I saw no one smoking anything. Well, except when I left the park to go up on the overpass to have a cigarette, and there were some other tobacco smokers up there, along with several Portland police who apparently had nothing better to do than to stare down at the crowd. I don't know what they were enforcing. They didn't do anything. Maybe they were taking pictures. Seems to me these conditions are impossible to meet, and it's unfair to hold anyone accountable to impossible conditions. Get real, folks. Give them the permit. Overturn the Park Department's ruling. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, my name's Danelle Malloy, better known in the community as Pixie Pan. I'm a patient activist and a mom and a member of Parents for Pot Portland chapter. I take my son every single year. He'll be 4 in November. This year I only took him on the second day I think he was there an hour so I could perform in my show and move on. It was too, we use the word in the community, sketchy. It was too weird. All the checkpoints that he had to go through for a 3-year-old is quite overwhelming, and I'm in and out of all the gates behind stage, in front. I'm everywhere all day long. And with my son, it just would have been crazy, in and out. They checked a 12-year-old's lunch that he got from craft services, a 12-year-old's lunch for illegal drugs. He's 12. His parents were right there, and they came from craft services. So he shouldn't have been checked again the second time, you know, through the gate the second time to get back to where his family was. I hope this year that you do grant us the permit and that it is a lot more family-friendly on the part of the Portland police and the security measures that were put out there this year. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Scott Hall. I'm a very dedicated volunteer at both Hempstock and Hempfest in Seattle. I just want to come and ask you, please grant us this. As a dedicated volunteer, I promise to do my part to follow the rules and the regulations that it's going to take. I know that all of our volunteer staff is right with me. We need this. A lot of the volunteers that are coming help, they don't have anything else going in their lives. They get this one week at Hemp Fest or 3 or 4 days here. It changes them sometimes. The city needs it. It helps everybody involved. Thank you.
Hi, Mayor and members of the committee. My name's Mitchell Goldman, and I just have a quick thing to say. You were talking about Waterfront Park and what goes on there. If you go to Waterfront Park any day of the week, you're going to see everything that you're accusing us of. A couple of months ago, a friend of mine and his girlfriend were in the park and sat down at a bench there and were approached by some drug dealers in the bench that told them that was their bench. They needed to get up and move, and repeatedly got attacked by skateboards. His girlfriend got knocked out cold by a skateboard, got hit in the back of the head with it. He was up there defending against 4 or 5 different guys that were attacking him because that was their drug dealing bench. So where are your police taking care of that? I'd like to know that. I mean, that's an everyday occurrence. That isn't something that's a weekend thing that Hempfest creates. That's an ongoing problem that you people need to address. And you can't blame us for that. That's an existing problem that existed way before Hempstock and will probably exist way after Hempstock. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I've never done one of these, so bear with me. I'm on active chemotherapy also, and 2 grams of full whole plant cannabis oil, however anybody wants to pronounce it. But I'm here today because of that.
For the record, your name, though.
Oh, I'm sorry. Stacey Marie George, and I moved here in February of this year from Melbourne, Florida, 3,700 miles, for your wonderful medical program. I am alive today because of your cannabis medical program. I am a direct result. I have a 9-year-old daughter that lives in my home full time. I make my own medication every morning to keep me alive with the chemo. My daughter is not infected by it. She's not affected by it. I bring her to cannabis-inspired events around. She has not blown smoke in her face. She is not partaking of cannabis. I want her to be able to go to an event like Hempstock because everything I believe in is represented at that event. The education alone for hemp, industrial use, medical alone. I not only juice cannabis, I eat a clean, pure, organic diet as much as possible. I represent what I believe in, medical, modern, and homeopathic. I believe the two can work together. Unfortunately, I could not rapidly cure my cannabis, or cure my cancer, I apologize, with cannabis. I had to go on chemotherapy as well. But I am one of the prominent examples of the patients in this community who will get out and who will speak about the realistic implications of what we're asking, a family-friendly event that can be realistically monitored to allow people to come together for what they believe in and pass on that education to people who do not have it. I believe that's what everybody is here for today, at least I am. I thank you so much, every single one of you that I have not had the pleasure of meeting, and all of the work you have done in the great state of Oregon. Thank you for allowing a place for me to come and live with my children. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're glad you're here.
Come on up, and then I think we'll also call to see if there are anyone here that wants to speak on the opposite side, but give you the chance first, please.
My name is Jennifer Valley. I live in Happy Valley. And I think what we want here really is just equal protection under the law. We want to be able to peaceably assemble and exercise our right to free speech without unwarranted searches of our persons and papers and belongings. I went to the Hempstock last year. As a member of a third-generation military family that's left their blood in the mud for our Constitution for the last three generations, I was deeply offended at having my bag searched over and over, the level of security that we were it looked like Nazi Germany. It was out of control. And I cannot believe that this is where we are. Now that marijuana is legal, we're going to go back and be so far from, you know, what we practiced before marijuana became legal. Because let me tell you, marijuana was legal for 40 years, and you didn't stop me from smoking any place I wanted to, anytime I wanted to. And it's time for change. We've had enough of this war on drugs, which has done nothing but destroyed our country, turned us into the number one incarceration nation in the country. It's a devastating racial inequality. 70% of the people arrested for marijuana in Oregon are young black men or young men of color, and the other 30% are poor white men. It's used as a tool of oppression, and it's time to remove that tool of oppression and allow us citizens of this country to have the same civil rights as every other citizen of this country without having someone yell marijuana and suddenly none of the rules apply. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's move to is there anyone here who wants to speak in opposition to the appeal? Individual speakers? All right, then it now comes to the point where we need to bring the Parks Bureau back up for closing statements and further council questions. I think I'd also like to call the Police Bureau back up in a minute, but let's hear from the Parks Bureau first.
So I wanted to specifically address two things. Specifically regarding the question of the perimeter and the event area, I believe you've been handed maps mm-hmm. of the actual event area that is in the permit. And within the security plan, which is officially a part of their permit, and on page 8 of the security plan at the bottom, we describe in detail the event perimeter and what must the event do to manage it. Would you like me to read that?
No, I see it. It's page 8. So is this boilerplate language that typically appears in event permits?
This is very similar, yes.
How similar?
If I were to say it was boilerplate, we have had similar, but this is not out of the norm of any event that we have. The only reason why I'm not saying it's not boilerplate is because I have not spent any time staring at multiple others before this event.
Okay. Okay, so I'm sorry, continue. I interrupted you.
So this specifically details how we want you to address where your event impacts within park property. It clearly defines roaming. It defines where the security guards for your event, which you hire, which you contract with to maintain your event. It's clearly not within a restrictive fence. It is clearly the entirety of the park space, which is defined in that map quite clearly. The other issue that I wanted to point to was that there were multiple individual sightings, visual observations of activity, not only outside, which we have defined, but also within the event. And those are by the actual officers that were on site, and we have them here with us today, and we have their documentation and their observations. I'd like to turn this over to them. Heidi.
Sure, that would be helpful.
Good afternoon. I'll have Officer Payne testify. She is to be across the street also, so
okay.
About her observations at the event.
And do we have documentation? Because what I have in the record is from the 2013 event. So for whatever reason, what appeared in my packet for this hearing is the police record from the 2013 event.
There are two. There's one at the very beginning as well. We kept the entire history of both years so you could have some continuity of the observations and the continuance and the consistency of the issues that we had both in 2013 as well as in 14.
Okay. So why don't you detail a little more for us the number and type of incidents or problems that you encountered. Give us a sense. Again, there's typically about 5,000 people there at the peak of the event. How many incidents were you dealing with at the peak of attendance?
All right, Mayor and City Council members, I apologize. I have grand jury here in about 20 minutes, so I'm going to try to make this quick.
We won't need you for 20 minutes.
I apologize. So I was assigned to work plainclothes during the Hemp Festival. While walking into the interior, and I also work downtown patrol officer, so while driving by, I would often have to roll my windows up during the Hemp Festival because it smelled of marijuana, and I don't want to smell that in my car. So, and then sign is plainclothes. Before I even walked into the interior, I could smell burning marijuana right away. And several times walking throughout for about an hour and a half, I could also pass by booths and smell a very small, strong smell of marijuana, not just your typical burning marijuana, but as if it was sitting there for some time. I smell that on a daily basis in parks and around downtown, too. Also, I was able to approach a group of people that were selling baked goods, loaf of bread, and cookies, and I was able to actually buy a loaf of bread and was offered cookies for buying the loaf of bread for, it was about $5 in my report, and it specifically stated it had marijuana in the baked goods. I also watched a drug deal go down at one of the vendors. One of the vendors was handing a baggie of marijuana to another person who was giving him cash. I approached that vendor and asked if I could also buy some marijuana, and he specifically said, well, technically we're not supposed to do that. And I said, well, I have some cash, and he exchanged cash and gave me a baggie of marijuana for the cash.
Did you arrest him?
Hey, folks. No, sorry. Okay. Any further information about the scale of the problem?
Yes, good morning or good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Dave McCorn, police officer with the City of Portland. Been so for about 18 years. Been around the block once or twice. So I was assigned to Hemstock as a uniformed patrol officer with my partner, Officer Mike Bledsoe. And our job essentially was to just maintain a presence within the event. As we were patrolling on foot inside the perimeter of the event, we began to notice the constant whiff or odor or passing odor of marijuana. I contacted Sergeant Dobson, the person who couldn't be here today, and informed him of that. And he said, let's begin to document those on a more formal basis. So I actually took the event map, and I began to note we did any time that we smelled the strong odor, not a passing or just a whiff, but a strong odor of burning marijuana. And so over a period of about 3 hours, I documented 16 individual events, unique events within the perimeter, and I documented those on the map I have before me here. And those were, as I said again, strong odor. So we'd track it. We'd try to see if we couldn't follow up. And of those 16 events, one particular individual was found. He was lighting a marijuana cigarette under a ball cap, kind of sitting down isolated by himself, easier to find than most because the crowd was moderately dense. And so we asked him, what's up? And so he surrendered the cigarette, and we asked him to leave the event.
Thank you. Back to my earlier question, do we have any record of either 911 calls or non-emergency number calls from citizens or adjacent property owners during the event?
I did make the call to the Bureau of Emergency Communications to research that information. That usually takes a little bit more time. She is researching it now. She is attempting. She'll email me that if she...
Do you remember any calls coming in from dispatch based on 911 calls?
As for myself, I was focused on the event, and so I wasn't listening to dispatch, you know, with regular 911 calls.
I worked patrol during that time period, and we did receive calls. They were not 911 calls. Most were non-emergency calls. I don't remember how many, though. That was too long ago. I apologize.
Okay.
Mayor, I have a few questions, if I could. And I apologize if you've already put this in the record. So, I want to focus you on the most recent event. So, were there any arrests during the event?
I did not make an arrest. I was plainclothes. We don't make arrests.
Folks, in the back, please, if you're testifying and people were hissing and making noise, the mayor would stop the proceeding and ask that you be treated with respect. So please let these folks do their job. It does not help us make an informed decision to have all the background commentary. Please, let's be respectful to everybody who has a voice in this. So I'm asking, generally, were there any arrests during the last Hemstock?
I made no arrests. Any observation?
Not specifically. So it's more helpful for me to know, did the police bureau document any arrests during the festival?
Folks, please. All right, you can get back to us, but you don't know of any offhand, obviously. So,
okay, were there? Well, we're checking that fact. Were there any calls from medical service during the festival? Someone that had a medical emergency, excessive use of drugs, something to do with the weather, heat, or anything else? Were there any medical calls for service that we're aware of?
I don't know either.
Were there any citations for impaired driving in the immediate vicinity of the festival?
Again, that would have to be something that I would have to research through the traffic division and traffic bureau to find that out, and that I don't have specific information regarding that.
Well, and the reason I'm asking these questions is that I'm looking at the stat. I'm looking at the code, and to me, there's two parts of the code that we're going to get some instruction from council on, and we have to make a judgment on. I think.
Yes.
Yep. This is my first hearing of this kind, so we're all learning as we
go
along.
It's our second, actually.
Huh?
It's our second. We did this last year.
Yeah. You I mean, I said it's my first.
Okay.
I wasn't here for that one. So I'm trying to figure out where the goalposts are, what the rules are, and what we're supposed to, you know, what evidence we're supposed to weigh. So the conditions that are listed in the materials we have is that one of them is the proposed activity does not pose an unreasonable risk to public health or safety. So that's a very specific standard. And it doesn't say does not pose a risk to public health or safety. It says an unreasonable risk to health and safety. So in fairness, I want to ask you, what did you document at the event that you believe could constitute an unreasonable risk to public health or safety that we should consider as part of this appeal?
Well, I believe based on what we've discussed earlier about the amount of marijuana just simply being consumed as walking through the air, through the park itself, that if you're just there as a consumer to be exercising or enjoying the park, that could be have an effect on you as well. As well as, like I said, the documentation that we don't have as far as what happens after the event, leaving the event, driving, and so forth, the effect on your ability to drive.
And in fairness, I think one of the things I'm learning about marijuana and driving, distracted driving, is technology hasn't really caught up. We don't have great tools to measure that the same way we do, let's say, with alcohol. I mean, I have a zero tolerance for impaired driving, but apparently with marijuana, we don't have the same tools to evaluate it.
It's not the same type of tool. You're correct. There isn't a machine that you can just blow into, but there is a separate process.
The other question I was going to ask you is, in light of what you've observed and the recommendation you're making, is there anything that you would recommend, if the council's inclination was to grant the appeal and allow this to go forward, are there any additional conditions which you think we should consider which would address any of the concerns you have about the behavior that you document?
Other than what was stated before about it just being very difficult to be able to maintain the conditions of the safety and security plan that they had agreed to before as far as non-consumption or distribution or sales of at the event. It's not preventing anything about the message itself. It's just the concerns about all of the other stuff that surrounds it.
I may have some more questions. Looks like Dan wants to jump in on something here.
Well, I was, you just said that you didn't really have any evidence at your fingertips about any off-site impaired driving or impaired behavior. And I guess I felt the proponents bring up a good point about the Blues Festival or Music Fest Northwest, where you could make the same conclusion that people are leaving those events impaired. So why... I guess I feel like there is somewhat of a double standard. I guess maybe it's not a double standard. I just think that
please, whether you agree or disagree.
I don't think it's a double standard, but somewhere along the line, the proponents of this event and the city folks have gotten off on the wrong foot. And it seems like it's time to sort of, especially in light of the action of the voters in November, to, you know, start off on the right foot on this event and reduce some of the animosity that seems to exist between this event and parks and law enforcement and security and parks rangers. So I guess that's what I'm looking for, is how do we sort of move on? And I feel that there is somewhat of a double standard being held here to the types of conditions we're imposing on this event versus the types of conditions we impose on the Blues Festivals or Music Fest Northwest. And not just conditions, I guess it's the enforcement of the conditions. So.
Just the one comment that I have about that it was brought up earlier is that I have worked with these other vendors, Rose Festival, Brewers Fest, and so forth, and Blues Festival, And something that is different in regards to those events is specifically about alcohol and so forth, is that there are alcohol monitors there, specifically for that, to be verifying and checking for that. Security does address those issues when they come up immediately, and they bring it to our attention when we notice something also that is taking a wrong turn as part of the conditions of their permit. We bring it to their attention and they address it immediately, which was not seen at this event.
The challenge that I think we have, parks, is that we as managers of the public trust, the property that is our park system, we have very strict guidelines that we are instructed to follow. And unfortunately, one of those, in this case, is that we follow and we make sure all our events follow state and federal city law. In the permit, that's the main thing which we point out, is that that's the guide, that's the standard we apply to every event, not just this event, every event. We may push harder on this event because we have 10 years of experience of trying very hard, working very hard. We have met with this group more than any, I think I can safely say this, more than any other event, attempting to solve the issues that reoccur. And the main issue is that you are not legally allowed to smoke and consume marijuana in a public facility, public park.
And I have to say, is, since this is my first hearing on this, I appreciate that we give you the direction to enforce the law. So I'm not here to quibble about that. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is what's the threshold above which there's enough violation of the conditions that I feel comfortable sustaining the decision you made. Let me give you an analogy. We know that in some events in Tom McCall Waterfront Park in the past, there's been significant gang violence. So one way we've addressed that is put a lot more uniform officers, a lot more security people. But there is still a chance that there is going to be some gang-related activity. It's inevitable. We've never had a conversation about canceling the event or denying a permit because a illegal activity occurs during the event, and that would certainly, if there was gang violence, and then the question would be, was it encouraged or condoned by the applicant, or is it something that happened during the event? So the two questions that I'm struggling with is, what's a critical mass of activity that constitutes an unreasonable risk to public health and safety, because that's what's in the code? And the second is, do we have sufficient evidence that this behavior that has been documented by our officers was encouraged and promoted by the organizers, or is there just, do we have to accept the fact that at these kinds of events, certain kinds of things are going to happen which we can't regulate? I know that, for example, I've been to events where we discourage people from having alcohol, and we don't check every picnic basket, and we don't check every flask, and people sometimes sneak in a cigarette or a drink, and it's not technically allowed. So that's what I'm struggling with. And I understand you have a difficult job, and I appreciate that your job is to enforce the rules, and I appreciate that the police's job is to document what they think or what they believe are violations of the law. I think we have a different sort of test we have to apply here.
I guess I would like to ask, again, given the fact the law has changed, I mean, would you expect, given the days after the event in late September of this year, people can walk into any liquor store and, as long as they're 21, purchase marijuana legal? Do you still think there would be any need for anybody to sell to you under the table, over the table, to sell edibles to you, things that are now within days would be available legally? Do you think you'd see the same sort of illegal behavior that you witnessed?
Actually, that's not what's going to happen, but eventually that will be the case, that it will be able to. And I think the difference is the use of the substances in the park.
No, I understand, but there was mention of, of a sale. I mean, you executed a sale. Somebody bought an edible. I'm just saying, would there be any motivation by anybody to need to go to the hemp stock to get their supplies when they can get it legally?
Right. Within lots of other locations. Well, that's speculation, so we'll let them off the hook, but I appreciate the point. Other questions for our staff resources here? And anything else that you want to add before we bring the appellant up for rebuttal?
Nope.
Okay, stand by in case we have any other questions for you, but let's give the appellant the chance to come up and take 5 minutes if you need them for any rebuttal or closing points you'd like to make before the council discusses this. Come on up, please.
Thank you, sir. I think it's clear that there was an active attempt on our part to curtail the use of cannabis in this park. And we did everything in our power, as Mr. Llewellyn said, to identify marijuana smoking and to stop it. And I was at one time on Sunday afternoon, the last second day of the event, told there was a vendor who was selling marijuana at his booth. I had no evidence of that. But I was told that, and based on that report, I immediately said, eject that person from the park. And the security people went immediately to do that. But I also want to point out that we weren't in charge here. We were forced to hire a $12,000 manager of this. And Sean Rogers says he's not talking to us anymore. We don't know why. He said, we can't talk to him anymore. We have to hire this guy for $12,000. We're all volunteers, by the way, to are paying to play. And that he was in charge, and that he was the one that the security people were responsible to, the hired security people. We were not. We were cut out of that loop. It was very clear that we could not manage this event. We were told we couldn't. And so we had to hire these other people to do that. Even given that, our volunteers went out of our way to make certain that every person there knew they were not allowed to smoke marijuana or anything else. And that vendors, as you could see, the police said that we did nothing. The Parks Department, Mr. Rogers, not the friendly one with a sweater that taught my kids, but Mr. Rogers said that there was nothing that we did to inform people not to smoke in the park. You can see these signs right here in front of you. They said, we didn't tell vendors not to sell marijuana. We gave you a pack of over 100 papers. Every single vendor signed an agreement that they would not sell or smoke marijuana in or around the park. We did patrol along the sidewalks outside. We were held to a standard that had never been held before. Mr. Rogers said he did not look over other permits. Well, we did. And no other permit that's ever safety plan, standard operating procedures that's ever been submitted to this city that was more stringent, more detailed than the one that we submitted. Also, events within that bowl had never before been required to fence off that fence area and stop people from going from one section of the park to the other section of the park. So we had two separate areas within our event that were completely separate and required separate security clearances and searches each time that people passed from one part of the park to the other. You know, we didn't really want to go into the bowl anyway. It's not good for sick people to be in that bowl. It hurts my knees. I'm a disabled U.S. veteran based on knee injuries, and we'd rather be in the flat area of the park, a little bit farther down. That's our preference. And where there aren't sidewalks between there. But we made every effort to comply. We did comply. I'm still dismayed at these statements that we did not comply. And I'll be happy to answer any of your questions.
I have a couple of questions, sir.
Go right ahead.
And appreciate your testimony. So I'm just looking through the record we have. Did you or the event organizers encourage or allow people to use controlled substances?
No, sir. We discouraged and stopped people.
Okay. There is a police report that documents, according to the report, rampant drug use, including use by minors. What is, as an organizer of the event, what is your position about that allegation?
Actually, Nick, be careful, because there is a 2013 report in here that I read that had that in it, and I'm not sure if I saw a 2014 report that had.
You're right. I'm referring to the 2013. Yeah. But I want to get, as an organizer, I want to understand his philosophy and commitment to the
right.
event. So
yeah, fair enough.
Certainly, we attempted to stop all smoking, whether tobacco, cannabis, or anything else within the park, and that's what our volunteers did. We approached people.